outside the box of religious obligation lies a road less travelled, into the heart of the Father's affection. Slinging freedom all over the place, this is the God Gym.
Well, it's not going to make it out in time for Thanksgiving, but the day after and for the weekend, for those of you in the States celebrating this weekend of family and feasting and fun and just a chance to reflect and be grateful. Kyle and I tried to get together this week, but Kyle was moving, so we missed our connection to try and help with that. And he's busy getting his family settled in a different house. Hopefully, next week or two, we'll get back on with him. Not sure we're doing this weekly at all yet. We're just doing it when I feel good. And this week was a pretty good week. So Sarah said she'd come in, and this is her story as much as it is mine. So if she's willing to come in and chat at us, I thought it'd be great to have her. Hi, Sarah.
Hi.
How are you doing?
That's a loaded question.
Yes, it is. But I mean it. I'm not one of those people just looking for you to say fine and we'll roll on.
I know you mean it. Yeah. I can feel different at any particular different moment in the day. So,
well, since this is Thanksgiving weekend, what do your more grateful moments feel like?
Grateful for the comfort and care and compassion that we have had, and from friends, and even from way that God's provided doctors and different things along the last few weeks. And so I'm grateful for that, to be able that we've made it through all these days.
Yes, we have. I wrote a blog last week about an angel that came to my door one morning. It was a real person, but an angel perhaps reflecting through her. In any case, after I wrote that piece and reread it and had some comments on it, the real angel in this, and that was a great moment. That was a very godly, encouraging moment. But the real angel for me in all this is what I'm most grateful for, that you've been here. You've been here every step of the way. And there in the hospital when we found out what was going on, and through it all, and God knows you're covering more than your share of work in this household at the moment.
Yeah. I'm just grateful for different doctors thinking back on that, the one in the ER, and I mean, it just keeps going, and just so many different little things that I wouldn't say necessarily any of them are big, but it's just little things and looking for those little things and being grateful helped me be able to stay and keep going each step of the time.
What did you feel the first time you heard the word cancer?
Well, when he said, first he came in, he said lesion.
Yeah.
And fracture and all those, trying to register all those in my mind at the same time, I automatically go to cancer. That's when.
Well, that's what lesion is. Lesion's a nice way of getting there, or at least a gentler way of getting there.
I don't know what I felt.
Really? Don't remember? I was in a morphine haze, so I have a great excuse, but I heard these terms flying around, and I'm watching you trying to register what's going on inside of her, because these are scary words.
Yeah, I mean, it was just so shocking and stunned, and that's where I've, these last few weeks, I'm having a very hard time identifying. I had gotten better, I'd gotten pretty good at identifying what I was feeling before that, but since then, it's hard for me to identify what I'm feeling. I think because I've maybe have so many different ones that are just bouncing off the walls and inside me.
Must be fun living in there these days, huh?
Not necessarily. I don't know. That Inside Out, is that what that movie is?
Yep, Inside Out.
Oh my gosh, they must be having a lot of battles going on right now.
You must have 40 different personality types going on.
I don't know. I mean, my mom, she died of cancer. And so, and that's where I go. That's where I try. I generally go to the worst case scenario. Largely, a large part of the time is because of growing up. I've lived the worst case scenario, and I have been conditioned. I think that helps prepare me. I have to be prepared in order to be able to deal with stuff. And so maybe that's where I go, but.
Kind of a defense mechanism, kind of assume the worst thing that could happen. Yeah. And yeah. Hope that doesn't happen.
I mean, it was disheartening and shocking, but then what are you going to do? Okay, what do we have to do?
And you put your head down and you get it done one thing at a time.
I'm not sure if that's always a good thing. That's how I've lived and survived my whole life. And so I have to try it. But I've been getting help through this time. And, you know, I keep hearing and knowing that I'm a different person. I'm in a different place now than what I was before. But when you ask, now I remember kind of one of the things that I was when cancer was said. Anger never was there, but the fear of you dying. Because I didn't know, we didn't know what, you know, the unknown until you have a diagnosis and to know what you're facing. The unknown is a very limbo state.
Especially if you're a worst case scenario kind of person.
yeah, doesn't bode well for anybody inside of you. And so.
I remember just being shocked by it, shocked that I could have a fractured vertebra in my back. That was the first bit of news. And then it was what causes that. And there's some kind of lesion there that multiple myeloma is the diagnosis.
Yeah, the took me a while. I mean, it just takes a while to process. It's just a fracture. And I was just like, a fracture? How did he get a fracture? He didn't fall or anything. And so it's just trying to process all that information, lesion, and then he never said cancer. It was the back doctor was the one that was saying that. And then everything just happens so fast and unrolls. And then you have this emergency surgery, and then you're talking to an oncologist, and then then they're doing one test after another, and then you have surgery, and then, you know, then you get the blood clots, and then, you know, you're not supposed to get out of bed. And so it's like a roller coaster, that ride that just does not stop.
No, it doesn't. And it's, you know, the way we were at, it wasn't like we had a diagnosis. Let's go check out some other second opinions. Let's go do a bunch of research into this thing. We were at the moment where everything had to happen right now.
Yeah.
Including starting chemo, which I did at the hospital, including doing the back surgery within the next day. We're about 6 weeks from that now. And just to give an update, I think I'm about 90% better in my back surgery area. Not a lot of pain. I'm not having a lot of freedom of movement yet, but I don't have a lot of pain, and I have a lot more freedom than I had. And the chemo, though, is kind of like a roller coaster ride. Some days are pretty amazingly good, and some days you just are horrible, and you really don't have any way. We've not been on it long enough to figure out where those highs and lows go. Yeah. We only go in once a week. It's not a long IV. It's a shot or two that is a little long. But the prognosis, and I think we said this last time, but just for those of you not caught up on everything, the prognosis is that this is very much able to put it into – always forget this word.
Remission?
Yeah, put it into remission, and then they can manage it there with drugs. So they're not trying to completely eliminate it or cure it, but they can. They've got good options now to put it in remission. And then we pretty much go on and live a normal life on a pill or two to keep things at bay.
That's what we've been told, assume, and hear.
Yeah, so that's the best case scenario, maybe. Or yeah. Healing from God would be the best case. Someone asked me this week in a call, have I been disappointed at God in all of this? That'd be a good thing to ask you. Have you been disappointed?
I don't know if I, no, not disappointed, because I'm the worst case scenario. I grew up with all the stuff that had happened to me in things in the family. And so I don't live with a lot of expectations of God and that he's going to do a lot of things. Not, I know he could do things. I know he can heal. I know that that's what he does, but it hasn't been my experience to see that or have that taken away or healed or the tough times or the abuse be taken away. So I don't expect that of God. I don't. So if I'm not having any, in my mind, I go, if I don't have a lot of expectations, there's nothing that, you know, I would be disappointed in because I'm not expecting him to do something. And yep. I know that's not, I mean, that's may sound horrible, but I mean, I know God can do those things. And but it's just like, okay, it's going to be the tough things are going to go through. Things aren't going to go right. Things aren't going to be, it doesn't mean that he's not going to be there to help me. And I'm learning to trust by seeing where he has done in the back past, but he hasn't lightened the physical pain, the abuse, and other things in my life.
So how does that make you feel towards him?
It's not something that I probably ask. I mean, with prayer, I mean, my dad had Parkinson's, so I mean, there's, I mean, endless times that was prayed for, but I mean,
every faith healer in the nation at the time.
Yeah, and so I've seen people be healed, maybe on a hand or two. Not a lot, and I know that that is something that he can do, but from my experience in my life, that's not something I'm going to expect or grab hold of, that where I'm going to expect him and demand that he does that, because I haven't seen him do that a lot, but I see him just be there in the walking through the painful parts. I don't know.
And we don't know all that he does at a time like that, do we? Because we know, you know, if something got healed overnight, you would be able to go, okay, that was God. My numbers, the marker they're using in my blood, dropped from 1,100 to 28 in four treatments. To me, and the doctor's pretty astounded by it. I'm going, God's at work. God's at work around all of this. He's not. We tend to see the big splashy thing. I've got a good friend who worked closely with Oral Roberts a long time, the faith healing evangelist. And toward the end of his life, he said to a good friend of my friend's, so this is fourth hand now, so it may not even be true, but he said to my friend, he said, you know, of all the people I've prayed for, and probably no one's prayed for more people to be healed than Oral Roberts did in his day.
Yeah.
Thousands and thousands, if not hundreds of thousands, all over the world, these tent meetings, whatever. At the end of his life, Oral is saying, I probably saw in my lifetime 6 to 8 genuine miracles.
Wow.
Yeah. And I'm sorry, what? You go on every week telling people to expect a miracle. And that, I tell you what, it bothers me because what Oral said about that, excuse me, President Roberts said about that is, if I hadn't prayed for all those thousands, those 6 to 8 wouldn't have been healed. I go, okay, I don't know if that's true because God's got lots of ways to do what he does. But what I think of is the thousands of people who go home every night expecting a miracle, sowing their seed faith into the ministry, paying for this, hoping that God's coming back to them with a miracle that's going to save them from what they're going through. And I just, it's horrible to think of, we kind of throw these promises out there. I'm not convinced there's anything in Scripture that says there's a place of faith or relationship for me where I can learn how to manipulate God to do what I want him to do. Particularly when what I want him to do is to make my life comfortable, pain-free, never challenged, everything goes well. And I know many people I grew up with, that was their expectation about God. And for most of your young life, when you're 20s, 30s, and 40s, you get away with most of that. Life goes pretty well. Your body's pretty good. But now, upwards of your 50s, 60s, 70s, the body's breaking down. It is fading away. something will kill us all. And I get email from people saying, you know, if you have the right faith, we don't die of any kind of painful stuff. And I'm going, see, I don't believe that. I know people who believe that, body, heart, and soul, who died very painful deaths.
Yeah.
So I don't start with the premise that God has a way for me to manipulate. And what I shared in last week's or 2 weeks ago podcast with Kyle was, when I first started saying, Jesus, if you need me to get this miracle from you, I don't know you in that way. And what he's shown me over time is, I don't want you to know me that way. What I do in you is a gift. What I do in you to walk us through this, to some of the other angels we've had, when you mentioned that when people found out that the price that you're paying to care for me and the load that you're carrying, someone organized a twice a week meal thing. And we've gotten meals from all over the U.S. Now, the meals don't come. People contact a restaurant locally and do a little Grubhub something, but we show up with a meal. And I would have home cooking every night, but it really helps you have that space in your week. Yeah. And so those are some of the other people that have really loved us well in this time, some of the other angels. But when I asked if I disappointed with God, my answer was no, I'm not. I'm disappointed that he didn't heal it the way I wanted him to. But I know this about God now, and I love that I'm at this place in my life. When God's not doing the thing I think I need him to do, or I want him to do, or that I think love would demand him to do, I trust his love more than I trust my perspective on those things. So I can say, hey, we're going to heal this. That'd be great. He is healing it. I don't think medicine or whatever other resources you use that make you feel better are opposite of God. They're all part of God and the gifts that God's given and the wisdom God's given in the world. So I'm not disappointed in him. The circumstances have been horrible. There have been times I've been so sick, I even looked at you and said, I can't live this way.
Yeah.
And I know that's hard on you, but we've been honest with each other through stuff like this now. And I remember that one day, it was the worst of the days. It was the worst. And you said, remember, one day at a time. I'm going, okay, so this day I can't take much more of. By the next day, we were at treatment. They changed some meds. I was better within an hour and a half of having been to the meeting.
See, I've learned, I guess, that, and I know, maybe I've learned that I know, that God is always working. We know he's always working.
Always.
And if I'm not seeing it, then that's where or recognizing it, then that's where I try to look for things. And that provides encouragement and the ability to be able to take the next step, to keep going. And so in this, and that's where I go. I'm trying not to go the why. And I've seen it. I've seen with, you know, when things like this happen, and I know with my mom and things happen with my mom, with my dad and his illnesses. And a lot of times the thing is why and what did I do? What did I do? It's like, it's my fault that these things are happening to me. It's my fault that, you know, it was dad's fault that he had Parkinson's, or, you know, that people get cancer. I mean, it's just, why there is a reason why God didn't protect us. And that's where, you know, that's where I'm not disappointed in any of this, because I don't expect him to take away the pain.
Well, he'll be with us in the pain.
Yeah.
But like somebody said, expectations are resentments waiting to happen. And they really are. Yeah, where we have expectations, we're going to have resentments, because things, whether it's people or God or however we shape that. What I love about being in the place that we seem to be in now, which I love, which when trouble happens to us, I mean, I went from, man, we were talking about some of the happiest days of our lives to, you know, with some plans going on this fall, coming up in the spring that we're all having to cancel our way out of. But I'm thankful I didn't spend one moment going, okay, what did I do wrong?
Yeah.
But is this sin in my life? Is this an open door to the enemy? Is this? I really love the fact that I don't see God sitting there and said, yeah, you know, you missed this back there, so now you're going to get this to go through. That's not who he is. At the same time, we live in a world that maybe, you know, some disease I think is just capricious. It's the fallenness of the world. It just happens. People get sick. People get cancer. People get whatever. Some of it I think can be an attack of the enemy. Not always. I've had a number of people write me saying, in this case, because we were just getting on that conversation about justification and righteousness and justice and all those good things, that it felt a little like the enemy kind of cut in. And I see that too. There's a part of me that goes, yeah, this does feel like that, which initially that goes, oh, then God's going to thwart it. God's going to end it. Instead, what God seems to do, as he did at the cross, the enemy's out to kill Jesus. Well, I'm going to use this to redeem something else. I'm going to thwart the enemy by using what he's doing rather than cutting it off and not allowing it to happen. Paul says, someone sent me this scripture, 2 Corinthians 12, I was given a thorn in the flesh, a messenger from Satan to torment me. Now, he said he was given that because so he wouldn't grow conceited with some of the visions he had been having. He said, three times I pleaded with God to take it away from me, but this is what he said, my grace is sufficient for you, for my power is made perfect in weakness. So Paul says this, therefore, I will boast all the more gladly about my weaknesses, so that Christ's power may rest on me. That is why, for Christ's sake, I delight in weaknesses, in insults, in hardships, in persecutions, in difficulties, for when I am weak, then I am strong. That's God too. That's as much as, you know, praying for the sick and seeing people being healed and all those kinds of things. This is God too saying, no, there's a bigger purpose here. Hardship, difficulty, pain is not something that shakes God up. In fact, all the writers in the New Testament tell us that it deepens our faith, deepens our character. I know I see things about pain now, having been to the most extreme limits of it that I think I've ever known, just raw pain, that has brought out more beauty in who God is and my life in him. I now know the truth of these things, and I love the fact that we're not spending time going, okay, Wayne's got a back problem, he's got cancer, what did he do wrong, what do we do now? We haven't wasted any time there.
No, I don't go there. I know that, and I try to. I rarely ask why, because that doesn't. I mean, there's. I don't think we ever are going to find out why, and then that bodes, I think, from again having you're expecting God to do something, and I've never found God to be a fairy godmother or whatever that kind of scenario is. And that might be pessimistic. I don't think so.
I don't think so. I think it's hard for people to hear because we want a God that fixes everything that goes wrong for us. But what we're doing is we're creating a God in our own image. That God will give me all the things I want and that'll be good for me. You wouldn't do that to a 2-year-old or 3-year-old or 5 or 13-year-old.
That's where, you know, like when we were with Zoe just down in Florida, and I just like the whole thing and having hope, that's where I try to have hope and try to trust. If I can get back to looking and remembering that God's always working, he's working today. What is he doing? And trying to find it. And a large part of the times there are little things. But by even if how minimal it is, seeing something, it helps keep the hope and the trust alive and the ability to keep going on. Beautiful. But a large part, right now, I would say I'm just in survival mode. It's just to trying to get through the day. And it's just keeping up on top of things that need to be just done today.
And you were on a journey of your own before this happened. I mean, people who followed us over the last 2 or 3 years, your struggle through trauma. This has got to feel like, I mean, it's got to impact your journey to some extent, that this is an interruption, not only of maybe things that I was excited about, but this interrupts part of that process. I know that's where I felt the pain of this the worst. Even my own pain is, I can't be the person right now who's taking care of you. You've got to be the one taking care of me. And you do it well. And I know that's part of your, you know, trauma compensation in times past is the whole fawning thing. So we keep an eye on that.
But that's what we do for each other, right?
It is what we do. But I mean, has this impacted your healing journey? Do you think it's put on hold? Do you think it's interrupted? Or do you think it's continuing through it?
Well, it might be continuing, but if it's continuing, I'm not aware of it. Because my, like I said, I have a hard time identifying my feelings, maybe because there's just so many of them that are just bouncing around. It can be grateful at one time. It can be sad. It can be maybe angry. It can be, you know, they can just overwhelm. There just can be so many that are just all in there. And that, you know, for everything that we've gone through, it's understandable. And so I would say if I'm getting triggered, I'm not really identifying it and reacting to it. And it's just, my mind's just like, okay, what do I have to do today to get through today? And then it's even in today looking at different things around. Nope, that doesn't need to really be done. Like somebody just told me, it's not a time that everything has to be perfect and right.
Exactly.
And so, and it's not that I necessarily have to have everything perfect and right. And I mean, Mandy has changed, and it was been a struggle, and she's my poor garden. And so, you know,
she's taking her frustrations on the pack change. The alpha dog in the pack went down, so the little dog in the pack decided she's going to be the caretaker for everybody.
And so, yeah, and so, you know, she's just done some things, and I just like, okay, if those gates are going to be up for a while, or, you know, having to manage certain things and just like, just let things, certain things go, and you just know what you need to do for today. So I don't know. I'm sure it's there, but it's not in my forefront of my mind.
That's the hard part for me though, because I felt like I got to be your caretaker for the last two or three years. And I don't mean that in any kind of...
Well, you might get it.
I hope to get back to that, because it was all about this season of our lives was all about finding your fullness. And however long that took us, doesn't mean we couldn't do other things, but that was the point of my life. And we had some things planned this fall, winter to be part of that.
I canceled them.
But you end up being caretaker again, which you were caretaker to your parents when you were a little kid because they were working late hours. So you did the house meals, those things. You caretaker for your kids as a mom. You caretaker for your parents. As your kids got older, your mom and dad moved in.
Yeah.
And now we've had some space from that, but now you're right back to being a caretaker for a near invalid there for a few days. I'm actually being able to, I think, I don't know why I always put things in percentages, but I think I'm about 40% back to being able to do some things that I was doing to help out. And,
yeah, I mean, once you get into physical therapy around in January,
so long away. Usually, physical therapy, man, you're in it the next week after surgery. But
well, with my shoulder, I had to keep it, you know, still for 6 weeks, and you have to keep. They said to not even start physical therapy until 3 months. They have to give that time for all the whatever they put in you, the titanium or the steel plates and all that, to be able to. The bones to grow or
things got
to
heal. Yep.
And so until you can start, because you can't bend and you can't lift and you can't twist. And so, anyhow, and you just, until that happens, you know, that's what we do for each other.
We care for each other.
Mm-hmm.
Strong one helps take care of the weak one. So the weak one.
I don't know, strong and weak.
Stronger at the moment. Oh my gosh, I come out of surgery, I'm the weaker one in this family, for sure, right?
You're the one that is ill.
I think of that in Romans. I'm looking at Romans 14, where you who are stronger give way to those who are weaker. There's a whole idea of justice inside God, to get back to that conversation, which really is, when you've got gifts and you've got the ability to handle stuff for others, handle it. And when you're weak and wounded and hurt, then let others be that for you. I think that's very godly. So when I say I'm weaker, I don't mean I couldn't still beat you in a fight, but if he kicked me in the right place in the back, I'd probably be done.
I was trying and was doing pretty good keeping hope going, hope for a better day ahead, hope that God was in
How recent was this? Still in the hospital?
No. Well, no, where it was, I had lost that. I think it was in the midst of that week where you were doing so bad.
It was only a week and 3 days ago.
And so, and I just told somebody, and I texted this one lady who's has been a good, great support for me. And I just told her, I said, my hope is gone. I have no hope. That's about all I said, and I have no words. And that's where I am a lot. I mean, there's no identifying. There's no words are not there to even grab a hold of and think and identify. It's just.
What about now? You have hope?
Yeah. But she responded back to me. I told you about this. She was going to stand. Who was the characters in the Bible that were?
Moses, when the guys held his arms up.
Yes. And so that she was doing that for me. And that is when you can't and you just can't have it and have the prayers and the support and the encouragement and the texts and the words and the emails and the voicemails, how that, knowing that those people are there holding that place for you when you have it not inside of you.
One of the things, I talked to Toby this week, first time I've talked to him since this whole thing began, but we were talking about the narcissism of praying for yourself. And most of us have learned praying for ourselves because no one else is really going to take it seriously, that I've got to pray, I've got to be intense, I've got to, you know, really work hard to get the answer I want, whatever. He's just saying, is that why James points us to pray for one another? Call for the elders. Confess your faults to one another. Pray for another that you be healed. That other people are better at praying for my need than I am. Because the narcissism of self is, I just want relief. I just want pain-free. I want you to fix it. I don't have to deal with this anymore. I want it to be gone. Other people, having the emotional distance from it, pray differently.
But it helps when they know you can at least express to them what you're feeling and what your challenges
are. Absolutely.
So they know, because they're grateful, because then people have said, that's good to know, because then I know how to pray or what to pray for.
Yeah, like I know thousands of people that I get an email from, whatever, are praying for us, are praying for me and you and what we're going through. And some of that's just, oh, God, heal it. God, fix it. God, make it. It's the 15 to 20 people that are really inside this thing with us who are not just praying to fix it. They're like, if you're saying, I have no hope, I'm saying, then I'll be your hope. I'll hold hope for you till hope restirs in your heart. Now, that's a very meaningful prayer. It's not just, hey, praying for you, things will get better. It really is people who take on the journey with you. And that's particularly meaningful. That's, I think, what Toby and I were talking about. We need that in our lives, and not just you and me. Other people, when we start going through stuff, we hunker down, pray for ourselves, beg God to do what he needs to do. We don't invite. And the people that we have around us are people we've invited. Hey, we've got this struggle going on. And some people have called us to say, I know you got the struggle, and I want to walk with you. And that's good, too. I mean, we've got probably more than our share already of people that are really carrying this need before God. And we are seeing the results from it, and I hope the longevity from it. I hope to come out of this within 5-6 months, back to maybe not fully functional, maybe this medication, maybe something's going to have a bit of an impact. But there's things I can enjoy already now that give me hope that the day's coming when I'll be able to enjoy the life again, more normal with what I had before this happened. And to me, that's a beautiful thing. This is the fruit, which we started learning back when your parents were living with us and facing the need they were and the depression and how they took it out on you at times. The beautiful thing about living one day at a time is each day is its own story. So you're not writing the story today for worst case scenario down the road or for, man, if I'm going to feel like this every day for the rest of my life, I can't make it. It's one day at a time. We get through this one. Wake up tomorrow. And that's the prayer of Jesus. Give us today our daily bread, not just about food. For me, it's been that. I've had to actually say, Jesus, what can I eat today and not lose it? And actually asked him for ideas. Now, the ideas come. I don't know if you put them in there or they're just give me space to think. But But the dailiness of the journey is, hey, we don't know what's going to happen tomorrow. We don't have a clue. Our lives have demonstrated that pretty well the last few years. We don't have a clue what's coming next. So the only thing to do is wake up every day. And in the middle of it, not why. Why are we going through this? Why is that? Always to me is say, how are you walking me through this? How? What are you giving me today to manage what it is that I have? If I don't have any hope, I'm not sitting around praying for hope. God, I have hope, need more hope. I'm just saying, God, what are you giving me today? Because I trust him to give me what I need. And if that stirs hope down the road, and like you said, God does some things change pretty quickly, and you go, it's not going to always be like this. And we've said this a million times, how we just can't imagine grace. So when we're sitting around and thinking about worst case scenarios, we're there all alone. God's not with us in those moments. But when we're inside his grace, and when you're there, when I think about, if I'd have known when I was going to the hospital what I was facing, I probably wouldn't have gone. I'd be in worse shape today. But you know, you don't have to. You just, okay, roll with the punches. We're rolling with it. We're looking for how God can, wants to, will intervene. But as much as shaping our hearts in endurance as it is taking the pain away so we're free of it.
And part of it is just because when you're walking through it day by day, you're having to do the work and take the energy and the effort to do something, you know, like, just practical things, food, what to eat, getting prescriptions, having to keep, you know, track of everything, you know, all those, you know, and, you know, signing up for you, finding for your insurance and having, because it's Medicare and all that right now, setting up and enrollment. And those are the phone calls and those are the hard works. It's just not like you, he's going to come in and somebody, yeah. You know, somebody else is going to do all this little stuff. You know, you're having to do the grunt work. You're having to take the effort to go and make those calls, do the work to keep the steps and the momentum going. Yeah. And
but he's there.
Yeah, and it's in those little things for me. It's in those little things where, okay, that phone call helped answer that question, and that was a big relief. And those things become big answers to prayer and big things of gratefulness for me.
That's a tragedy. If you can't see God's hand until the miracle comes, you can't see it in the little stuff, the little ways God's nudging you here and there through the things we got to navigate, then you're really going to miss him. You really are.
I mean, it's just like, you know, when Carrie brought the, you know, the thing to the door and where the angel or, you know, just going when I had to go take the dogs to the vets to checkups and stuff, and then talking to my vet and then just saying, you know, the time we're having right now, and I just don't have a lot of extra energy, you know, with Mandy and helping me, and you're just working through that, and you come back and it gives you the ability to take a deep breath and just sigh, and it's just like, and that's just beautiful. And that's the things, those are the little things that you see along the way. I mean, I'm grateful for the ER doctor.
Me too.
That they were looking lower in your back and he looked up higher, and he wouldn't have found his perseverance in looking because of your pain level helped him to be able to take, and they did a different MRI, and then even though the results are not what you want to hear, but it was for him. If it wasn't for him, we would not have known about where it was. And so it's just those things. It's even being grateful for the, you're learning for the hard things.
Mm-hmm. I want to end our time by just reading this. I was awake the other night, one of those really, 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 really bad nights. I couldn't sleep and was up, and I was drawn to the 23rd Psalm, and I read it. I didn't read it because it was dark. I didn't turn on any lights. I memorized it as a kid, so I knew it was in there somewhere.
I'm sure it was.
It took me an hour to reconstruct it verbatim, to to be able to go, okay, because I quote too, and I go, missing something there. But it, when I got to the end of it, man, it's become my it's not verse, it's my chapter. I've been living this every day since then. It says this: the Lord is my shepherd, I shall not want for another. He makes me lie down in green pastures. He leads me beside the quiet waters where it's easy to drink. He restores my soul. He guides me in the paths of righteousness, or as I would say now, he guides me in paths of justice, which is so much a richer word than I've got to be more righteous. Is no, I want to learn God's justice in the world. He guides me in the paths of justice for his name's sake, not for me, for him. And even though I walk through the valley of the shadow of death, I fear no evil, for you are with me. Your rod and your staff, they comfort me. You prepare a table before me in the presence of my enemies. You've anointed my head with oil. My cup overflows. And then I love this. Surely, your goodness and mercy will follow me all the days of my life. And then I will dwell in the house of the Lord forever, or I will be at home in God forever. It's a beautiful portion. It's true of all of us, not just David, not just us, but those of you that are listening. God, there's nothing God can't walk you through. This story is still unfolding. We have no idea how it'll end for us or how it will continue or how it will resolve. And we're not going to talk about it on every podcast coming up, because I know lots of people going through all kinds of suffering, not just, we know lots of people with physical stuff. We know lots of people with religious stuff. We know lots of people with family stuff that's really deeply, deeply broken between parents and children and brothers and sisters. And boy, there's a lot of brokenness in the world.
So much.
And if God can be the one to walk you through the valley of the shadow of death, which isn't walk you around it, pluck you out of it with a drone, I'm going to walk you through it.
Yeah.
And there will be life there. And you will surely, his goodness and mercy will follow all the days of our life. And when that's over, we get to go be at home with him. Just great stuff.
Yeah.
Until next time, thanks for joining us today on the God Journey.
Thank you for traveling with us today on the God Journey. You can join this conversation by visiting thegodjourney.com.